and welcome to IVF BFF with me, Sian.
And me, Catherine.
A podcast about two friends on their respective IVF treatment in real time at the same time.
Join us as we lift the lid and demystify all things to do with the fertility journey, sharing each step as it happens, from the highs to the lows and everything in between. Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm fine. I just wanted to introduce Carl. He's here.
We've got a special guest today, guys.
I'm honoured.
His moment has arrived.
Is this your first guest as well?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm the guinea pig. I'm honoured. I'm just happy to be allowed in my living room because normally I'm banished to upstairs while this is all going on.
Should we explain who you are?
Oh, you probably should.
Yes. This is Carl Tracy. He is my husband.
That's right.
And he is our first ever guest.
Woohoo!
I'm a big fan.
He's a big deal, guys.
I've listened to all of the episodes, so yeah.
Yeah. It took a little bit of time, a bit of schedule, you know, sorting.
Yeah.
He's got a long list of demands.
Oh, absolutely.
He wanted a herbal tea of his choice.
Which I've got, thank you.
What flavour?
We are huddled around. I'm on the green tea.
Nice.
I've got... it's... just called Sweet Dreams, but I think it's blackberry and like something.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm on the old water, guys.
H2O.
Yeah.
There
you go. Love it. Well, yeah, welcome everybody to another episode. We've got the lovely Carl, and we thought it would be a really good moment to bring him on to chat about the partner perspective and the male perspective, because we are, and also we're now in the thick of it, aren't we? We're really doing treatment, so
we
thought it'd be good to diversify and have another voice for this 1 week.
Yeah, nice perspective, and I'm quite intrigued to hear what it's like for you, Carl, on the other side
of it. It's like therapy. This is going to be like, I don't know what's going to come out.
But it's free.
I could be a blubbering mess in the corner, just huddling around my green tea, but we'll see.
That would be really good for content. So,
okay, I'll see if I can shed a tear.
Okay, squeeze one out. But before we do, shall we catch up on our weeks?
Yeah, you go first. I feel like you're
okay.
Really in the midst of everything happening, and next week is rolling over quickly.
We're both now under doing the treatment, but mine, because of my short protocol, mine ramps up quicker, I think it's fair to say, than yours does. Mm. I started injections last Friday, and I'm on day 10 of injections, of stims they call it, to stimulate my ovaries. And I went in for a scan on Friday, which was day 8. So that's exactly a week since my first injection. So on Friday, I went into the hospital for a little scan, dildo cam again. I'm getting quite used to it now. I'm just like, maybe I shouldn't admit that. I'm just like, hello. Here we go. She's like, are you all right with this? I'm like, yeah. So saw my ovaries and my womb. And yeah, it was basically a little scan to check the progress of my follicles, check that everything was kind of progressing as it should be. So I sat down with a lovely nurse. She took me through what it was going to be about. And then she had a little look up there with the wand, with the probe. I think when you say ultrasound to a lot of people, or you say you've got a scan, they picture, if you don't know IVF, they picture the scan on the tummy.
The jelly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With the jelly, and they're like, oh, you got a scan. And I'm like, it's a different kind. And then as soon as you say like internal scan, they go, oh, I'm like, yeah. But luckily I don't find them too bad. And she said, first of all, the first thing she said was, your lining is fabulous.
Woohoo.
That's my womb lining, which I thought was a lovely way of describing it. Yeah, so my lining is nice and thick, and they want your lining to be, by the time you get to embryo transfer, to be at least, I think it's either 7 or 8 millimetres
thick. I think it's eight, thick. Isn't it? Eight.
Eight, okay.
Is optimal.
And mine
anyway.
Is 11.
Woohoo!
That's optimal. Mine's 11 millimetres. So she said, that's a really good sign. And then she said, I can tell from that that your ovaries are stimulating and your follicles are stimulating because they're giving off estrogen, which is building my lining, which is amazing. Mm. And then she had a look at them and said, yes, they are growing. They are stimulating, but they're on the small side. And I did think, basically, Sian knows I've been freaking out all week that nothing is happening, because I the first part of my stims I didn't feel much, and it turns out that it doesn't mean nothing's happening, because I think it's that thing of you want to feel some physical like evidence of stuff developing, but actually no symptom, they're not symptoms, they're side effects of the drugs. But still I was like, oh, it's all feeling quite mild. So I was freaking out that nothing was happening. But it's good to hear that stuff is happening and they're definitely growing, but they're looking a little bit small. So this is partly because they're being really careful, because I've got a high number of follicles, high-ish number of follicles, and a high AMH. They are being really careful that they don't overstimulate. So if they just give me loads of medication straight away, my ovaries are at risk of going absolutely berserk and kind of going off the scale, and we can't get them back, we can't rein them back in, and they will stimulate too much. But then they're trying to strike the balance between that and understimulating, and they're trying to give my ovaries enough to get going. She said, your ovaries are the sort that take a lot of effort to get kick-started, but once they go, they really go. So I think that's a good thing, but yeah, they're trying to strike that balance of like, like we don't want to overstimulate, but we want to give you enough.
Yeah.
And so they've upped my dose from Friday. So I've got more of the drugs on a nightly basis that I'm injecting. And they're going to check again tomorrow. I've got another scan tomorrow to check on the progress.
It's good that they're seeing you tomorrow. I think that's going to help you mentally, isn't it, as well? Because you're seeing them, and they'll be able to say quite quickly what's happening.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And there's a chance that my egg collection was meant to be Wednesday. So it's Sunday today. It's meant to be Wednesday. They might push it back to Friday.
How do you feel about that?
They just said if you need more time. Yeah, I mean, if I'm honest, I kind of can't imagine. I mean, again, I'm not a medical professional, but I'm like, I can't imagine being ready for it, because the idea was I go in tomorrow and they go, yep, all ready for Wednesday. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, surely if they're not there yet, it's going to take longer. Mm. But I'm not basing that on anything. So they might be ready. So I'm kind of half expecting it now. And I'm like, you know what, whatever it takes for the best outcome. Because I think I was saying to you, wasn't I, this has been a bit of a wake-up call for me, if I'm honest, because I assumed wrongly that a high amount of follicles meant a lot of eggs. And I was kind of breezing through all this, just going, oh yeah, I've been, and you kind of get told you've got a lot of follicles, so you'll probably respond well to the drugs. And I'm like, yeah, I've got loads of follicles, so that means loads of eggs, right? And I think I was a bit cocky. So it's kind of a little, I don't know, it's a little reminder that actually it's anyone's game and it is so unpredictable. Mm. Like, we just don't know. And it's that thing of, if even if you have a high amount of follicles, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get loads of eggs.
Yeah.
So that was a bit, you know, a bit real. I think it's all got a bit real
recently.
It has. I feel like it's gone, well, I feel like at my end it's gone quite quick, this bit of it.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, obviously I'm not the person, I'm not the person injecting myself every day. So for me, obviously life has just kind of carried on. Obviously I'm thinking about it all the time. And, but yeah, I feel like this bit is fast and
And I mean, and side effects wise, I think I've been up and down, haven't I?
Yeah, I haven't. I honestly haven't noticed any.
You haven't noticed the difference. I'm always emotional.
No, I haven't. Exactly. Like, I haven't really.
Exactly.
No. If anything, the only time you've cried is when you were laughing, like you were laughing so hard the other day.
Oh my God.
About the most stupid
thing. I was laughing about a really stupid thing the other day. So Carl's mum and dad were here, and we were chatting about the dentist. this is so random, but yeah, this shows just the extremes of my moods. And they were like, oh, I hate when they do the injections at the dentist. Oh, yeah. And then Carl said, oh God, yeah. And I hate when he does the impressions.
Yeah, you know, and you bite into to get the mold, the impressions. Yeah, so I was like, oh, I hate it when he does the impressions.
Yeah, he meant when you bite into a mold and he takes impressions of your teeth. What I heard was, I hate when he does the impressions. And I was thinking about impressions. Like, he does like, oh, who's this? And he does his best Donald Trump impression, or like Simon Cowell. And it was the way that Carl was like, oh, I hate it when he does the impressions. Like, the dentist every time is sat there just being like,
doing his best Michael McIntyre.
Now, before we start. And he's like, oh God.
Who's this?
But it's like not part of funny. The procedure.
No, it's like, yeah. It's like funny, ha ha ha. Carry on. But like 5 minutes later, Catherine is still literally like,
I'm
tears.
In the corner like crying with laughter. Right.
So that was probably about the most extreme emotions.
But then the next minute, I'm like, last night, I think I was quite flat, wasn't I?
Yeah. But you had a busy few days as well. Saturday night.
Yeah.
Normally.
I don't know what's the hormones and what is the, and what's the situation, really.
It's probably a mixture.
Back in tomorrow. Check up on those little follies. See if they're going mad or not going mad. And then tomorrow they should be able to tell me when egg collection's going to be, whether it's going to be Wednesday or if it's going to be pushed back to hopefully Friday. And that's me.
It's really all go, go, go.
It's a bit crazy, isn't it? It is. I feel like the short protocol does ramp up very quickly. Yeah.
And the... in terms of physical side effects, have you had any?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, just, I mean, bloating is definitely a thing. But then sometimes I'm like, is it bloating or is it Nando's? It could be either.
I cannot believe you just said Nando's.
Yeah, last night you were like, you just lay there and was like, I feel like a potato.
I do feel like a potato, but that might be because I've eaten potatoes.
Yeah.
I actually have to say, I thought that was so sweet. You said yesterday, Catherine, that you, Carl, got like you got the iPad set up in the bath. You ran me a bath.
Yeah, I ran me a bath.
Well, I was like, what can I actually... Because, you know, and we'll get onto this, I'm sure, but like, there's an element of feeling a little bit helpless at this point as the man, because we can't... We can't really do anything. I know some men do, you know, mix up the things, they do the injections and all of that.
But actually, I like doing that myself. Yeah. I don't like it, but I find a sense of control in injecting myself. Yeah. So I don't think I'd probably let you do that.
So I can go, well, what can I do? And if it's running a bath, it's running a bath.
Oh, all the time. And also the other day we sometimes, when sitting on the sofa, I'm sometimes nudging him being like, oh, go on, give me a hand massage or something. I did that the other day and Carl went, and then he remembered, he was like, oh, yes, that's fine. Yeah. He's like, I can't complain.
Playing that IVF card.
Well, you know, after this, you know, it's going to be the pregnancy card.
Oh, exactly.
Hopefully. Oh, God, he's got his head in his hands.
Not going to stop.
So that's me. How about you, Sian?
Yeah. Catch us up. So my scan on Friday didn't quite go as straightforward as I had hoped.
You had a bit of a curveball, didn't you?
Yeah, so mine was at 9 a.m. I was feeling all right about it. I was a bit nervous, but I was kind of feeling okay. And then when the nurse was so lovely, and I was just talking to her, and I just said, kind of like almost like a throwaway thing, really. I went, oh, just so you know, my husband Andrew, we actually got some test results back because, you know, he's had some like investigations over the past year because he had like some chest pains after doing a half marathon and stuff, and they just wanted to check into it, and stuff came back absolutely fine from that. But then one of the doctors just wanted to do some extra tests, and I just said, oh, you know, he had a genetic test for I now can't pronounce it, it's called like I can't say it. It's called FH anyway. That's what the short term is. And it actually came back positive for it. And I said, I just wanted to check, you know, to be honest, from a fertility perspective, you know, could this be part of it? Because obviously we don't really have a diagnosis. And she immediately just went, genetics. And I went, yeah. And she went, you know, whenever anyone uses the word genetics, I'm going to have to talk to the doctor because, yeah, there's a chance that this cycle might have to be stopped. And I just immediately went, what?
Gut punch.
Especially because, like, that was day... So this is day 17 of me doing this. Bearing in mind that I've been doing, like, the pill since, like, November. So I was just like, surely not. But she was like, oh, let's just get on with the scan. And I just went, do you really think that this is going to stop? And she went, well, she said, look, we don't know, but we can't, just so you know, that this could be stopped at any time. And I was like, it just frightened me. Do you know what I mean? Hearing
yeah.
that.
Because you don't consider it. You're so focused on the path ahead. You're like, okay, what's the next step? What's the next step?
Yeah, and then she said, well, let's get on with the scan. I don't find scans easy. I think I've had some pretty awful kind of like smear tests in the past, which means that I just get really tense and like I can't help like the muscles basically, sorry everybody, contract. So it makes it really painful for me if I'm not relaxed, right, basically. Yeah. And so obviously my body was going like this.
Yeah.
So she was like, okay, deep breaths. And it was like fine. Like I did dildo cam myself and it was fine, but it was
but self dildo cam.
I know. But oh God, the things we say on here. But the manoeuvring was quite tricky. And she was like, okay, don't worry, my skill set is that I can find difficult to find like, you know, uterus and your follicles and everything. And that all looked good, luckily. And like, it all seemed fine down there. Like, nothing's meant to really be growing. So that's great. It's not.
Yeah.
Because I'm obviously on the long protocol, which means that at the moment I'm in a state of menopause. Nothing should be growing. But obviously after that, she went, right, I'm just going to go and get the doctor. Do you mind hanging around for a bit? I was like, absolutely not. Would like to talk to the doctor myself. And then basically she went and spoke to the doctor, came back and said, you have to sit in the waiting room. He's literally just walked through the door. So I was literally sitting there for like 20 minutes. And I messaged Andrew, who was working from home. And I just said, there's a chance this may not be going forward because of what I said. And I can't help it. Like, I have to tell. I'm a proper oversharer. And maybe I didn't necessarily have to tell the nurse about all of it. But I felt like I should. Do you know what I mean?
And you couldn't have known that that yeah. would throw such a spanner in the works. Because you just, like, no one's told us that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so, basically, eventually I did see the doctor. And he basically needed to be convinced that we have had proper talks about it, that me and Andrew are on the same page. But basically, it just means that our future child has a risk of having, just being susceptible of having higher cholesterol. Now, it's not a life-threatening thing. It's not cancer. It's not, you know, all these other things that it could be. But obviously, and it's so mad to me that going through this process, we have to think about all these things compared to, I suppose, you know, just two people who just have sex and have a baby. And no one said, hang on a minute, have we done a full profile of your genetics, you know, before yeah. going ahead? I find it a bit bizarre, but I understand they have to do their job and they have to make sure that, you know, potentially we are able to have a child that's healthy. I also got the impression the doctor hadn't got a clue what we were talking about, so he had to do a bit of a Google search. And then I think when he saw that it affects 1 in 250 people, he was like, okay, I think it's fine. He was like, do you guys want to go ahead? And I was like, yes, I do. Please. Yeah. And it was all fine in the end, but like afterwards, and then I had to wait for the nurse, but afterwards I sat in the chair in the waiting room for the nurse and I just couldn't stop crying. I think it was relief. I was like, because when I was waiting to see the doctor, I was like, I have to distract myself. So I started looking at theatre reviews. That was like what I did.
Sure.
just sat in there going, I'm going to look at theatre reviews. Let's see what's going on. And that actually did help. But then after that, I was like, whoa. And it's a really kind of just a sobering moment, isn't it? That this could stop at any time. And obviously the word genetic, if you're going to use the word genetics in an appointment, guys, just be aware that they're going to freak out. So,
yeah. So don't tell them.
We're not saying don't tell them, but...
No, don't tell them.
But this is like so minor in a way. It's just mad. So yeah, now I really weirdly have been feeling the aftermath of that. Like I feel like I'm still in a state of anxiety. So I'm feeling really anxious.
It's the idea that the rug could be pulled from under you and someone could come in at any point and not for no reason, but just go, nah, sorry, time's up on this one, you know?
Just didn't think that that was even a possibility.
Yeah.
But
it's not, so that's good news.
Yeah.
Going ahead.
It is. And as Andrew said, he was like, look, let's not focus on that. The focus is that it's actually fine. It was just a little moment of jeopardy and now we move forward. So we're
bit of drama.
Bit of drama. It's fine. But now, obviously, I'm terrified about every scan. Because I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to stop it. But, of course, they're not.
Yeah.
Stop. It's fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where we are so far. Scan, next scan is Friday.
You've got one Friday. Okay. Yeah. I might be doing egg collection by then.
Bye. I know. No. But main reason... Let's
crack
here,
on.
We've
with
got
the main event.
Yeah, we've got
it's Carl Tracy. So Carl is my husband, and we thought it would be a really good opportunity to kind of open up the conversation. First of all, about partners, but also about male fertility, because it's just not spoken about enough.
Yeah, and I think it's really important because, and particularly because the reason you're having IVF is because of my side, you know, it's my infertility. It's I think it is important to speak up, and it's the more I'm speaking to other people about it, I'm learning how common it is. But I'm also learning that nobody is really talking,
and men typically don't want to talk about it.
No, like, you know, yeah, it's there's not a lot out there essentially for us. There are a few, and they are doing a brilliant job. You know, big shout out to Male Fertility Podcast. Amazing that they're doing that, and they've been a huge support. And I think, I think what they're doing is literally trailblazing. So I want to be part of that.
It's another voice.
Know?
Yeah.
I have to say, you're really, this is a huge topic. And even if we look as far back as, God, I don't know, since the beginning of time, the dawn of time, it's always been seen as, you know, it's the woman's fault, or like there's, you know, a lot of focus has been on us. And I don't know about you, Catherine, but there's been like appointments where they just talk to me, or appointments where they don't even put Andrew's name on it. And I have to say, Carl, you're so brave to be like here talking, because like you said, men do not talk, and that is
No, on the whole, they really don't. But we should, because it's definitely helped me process it all as well.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot there to process.
Yeah.
So
maybe take us back to, for anyone just tuning in right now, our kind of potted history was that Carl and I were trying for a baby for probably about a year before we... went for testing eventually.
Yeah.
A bit before that when we went to the GP, but you know. And then all of my tests came back fine. Tick, 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 all fine.
Yeah.
And then Carl had his semen test, which is a really important part of the fertility testing process. So do you want to just pick up there and tell us what happened?
Yeah. So for me, I was kind of doing, and this is my naivety, I was doing that semen analysis very much thinking, well, I'll do it and I'll get the numbers back, but it'll be fine. I know it'll be fine. I'm a personal trainer, keep myself very fit and well. Even kind of people we joked to in the past, hadn't we, about having a baby, they were always like, well, you know,
it's not going to be you.
You're like, going to be fine.
You're going to be fine. You know, yeah, your Mr. baby. Health.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't drink. Don't smoke.
No, don't smoke. Don't drink.
Eat
don't,
a never perfect diet. Better than my diet.
You know, quite. Yeah, I'm relatively.
Omelets. I can't believe it. There you go. Omelets. There you go.
Yeah, super I healthy. Look after myself.
Good.
Yeah, I do. I really do, and have looked after myself. Yeah, as I say, I very much do all the things I feel I should to keep myself fit and healthy. So quite naively, I went in with the idea that I would be fine. There's a long wait list, I will say that, for getting a sperm analysis. And 3 months, like we...
Through our GP.
Through our GP, that was. Yeah. So that's my first bit of advice to anybody who's...
Get it booked.
Just get it booked and get it done. Like, just to see what those numbers are like so that you're not, yeah, you're not hit with it kind of later on down the line.
Would you say to anyone who is thinking about their own fertility in the future, not just, oh, we're going to have a baby, like, in the next couple of months, do you think?
I'd say yes, but also... keep in mind that sperm is changeable. So there's no use getting probably a sperm test done 5 years before you want to have a baby. Maybe good to know, because if there is an actual problem, it'll present itself. But bear in mind that you need to do it kind of in real time when you're trying.
Yeah, I think there needs to be, you know, there are now at-home kits where you can get an idea, I believe, of your sperm health. But I think it would be good to have just a rough idea of what's going on.
Yeah.
Because I imagine that I'm 38 now, but if I had done this even 10 years ago, I don't imagine the results would have been that different.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, nothing has really greatly changed. I could be wrong. I don't know. You know, I'm no doctor, no scientist, but I imagine they would have been roughly the same. It was a long wait really to get that first test and to do that analysis. And I, as I say, I didn't really think too much of it. I mean, the process of actually giving the sample is quite an experience.
So what happens? Give us a potted summary.
In my head, I was like, oh, I'm sure you can just do it at the hospital, you know, give your sample there and then just and have it all done, kind of, you know, do it there. Whereas actually now you do it at home. And you have a time limit to get that sample to the hospital, which I think is about an hour, 50 minutes.
That's the wacky races.
Yeah. We call it the wacky races. And you only have literally 50 minutes. So, and the hospital we were using at this point was down in, where was it?
It's like Guildford Way.
It's Guildford Way. So... on a clear run, that's fine, but it's, yeah, I was racing down that A3.
Gosh.
And you have to try and keep the sample warm, you know. So
where did you put it then?
Well,
sorry.
I got a good tip with it. So I just started off with it in the pocket, but actually, if you've got heated seats, pop it on the passenger seat and just give it a little...
I don't know if that's medical advice, should we say.
I put it on the lowest setting. I didn't fry it, but, you know.
Don't fry your sperm.
But
they say to keep it close to your body.
Yeah, to try and warm. To try and keep it warm. Yeah.
It's funny because Andrew had to do his in the hospital.
Ah, right.
Yeah. Okay.
That I would have probably have preferred, to be fair. And, you know, parking at a hospital, oh, my word.
Not the best.
I think in the end, you know, I apologise. I think I parked in a disabled staff bay.
Oh.
That's how desperate it got. And I was like, I just need to get this sample inside there because I can't wait another 3 months for this. So I just dumped the car and ran up those stairs and gave over this sample.
And then hand it to a nurse.
You hand it to a nurse. You see lots of other shifty-looking...
men with... suspect, you know, vials.
Yeah, coming down.
You shared a lift with one, didn't you?
I did. We both knew why we were there. Yeah.
Did you say hello?
Another guy dropping off his...
No, but not at all.
Did you compare?
There was a look to go, yeah, we're both here for the same reason. And then round the corner you go and there's just a nurse there with a trolley full of samples.
Wow.
It's
what did you describe her as?
like
the BFG of sperm.
The BFG of sperm. You know how like in the BFG it has all the little jars?
Yeah. I do, yeah.
That, yeah, literally, she had a whole trolley full.
Little jars.
I was thinking, don't mix them up.
I was thinking,
what I mean?
how do they make sure that the labelling is
got a little
correct?
Label.
Yeah, they all have a label on, yeah. And they're all kind of, and you fill out this form and everything, and you know, yeah. Time that the sample was produced. And,
oh my god!
Yeah,
did you catch it all?
Did you catch it all? You know, I've Pokemon. Oh yeah, Pokemon's yeah, got to catch them all, guys. But that is worth saying as well. Like that is very important, and certainly the first part. To catch the very
the first swimmers out the gates.
Yeah,
you got to get them because they're going to be the quickest.
They're the ones, but everything and they you, yeah, yeah, you have to fill in this form to be like, did you get everything, the whole lot?
And you did.
I think so. I mean, who knows? this is very weird because my mom's going to listen to this.
Oh, so. I know. It's important. It's important.
It is important. And what happened? So yeah. After that, you gave your sample and you probably went back there. Yeah. It's all good. Life's good. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah, I kind of, yeah, I semi kind of forgot about it, really, in a way. Yeah. I just, yeah, naively, I did. Even to the point of when the results were due.
Mm-hmm. It was a few days later, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You were away and they sent a text saying, please discuss the results with your GP. Please call to discuss. Immediately I'm going, oh my God, something's wrong. You have to discuss, something's wrong.
Yeah.
But you were away and you were like, well, I can wait till I'm back on Thursday.
That's how much I wasn't thinking about it.
Wow.
So I think I called, I think I didn't get hold of the right person or something. And they rang back.
They rang
because I remember I was having a nap. I was having an athlete's nap. I was between client sessions. I have very early starts in the morning and sometimes we'll work in the evening as well. So I had the PT nap that we have, quick 20 minutes. And I left my phone on loud in case they called. And Kathy, you were napping as well.
I'm not a PT, but I had a nap anyway. Yeah. I have no excuse.
You were napping next to me and then, and the phone went mid-nap. So I kind of answered it very kind of, you know, groggy, thinking, who is this waking me up? And it was, it was our local doctors. GP, yeah. Worth saying as well, it's not the actual GP that calls though, is it not? I think I was talking to a receptionist, was it?
No, I think you were talking to a GP, you know.
There you go. That's how sleepy I was midnight.
And that's how confusing it is when it comes through.
And the phone call just said, your numbers, I'm trying to think of the exact wording she said, your numbers are slightly lower
than we would like.
Yeah, your numbers are slightly lower than we would like. At this point as well, can I just say my knowledge of sperm and numbers is nothing. I have no idea really what she's talking about as far as numbers go. Yeah. I know that Catherine was more clued up on this. Your numbers are relatively low. We want you to retest. We want you to do another sample.
Right.
Catherine's next to me going, ask for the numbers, ask for the actual numbers. We need a copy of the numbers.
Yeah.
So I'm just, you know.
Like, yeah, all right.
I'll come and get a copy of the numbers now. So we both just literally walked down to our local GP, like 10-minute walk away, and collected this sheet of paper, which gives you essentially
the numbers.
Gives
literally.
You the numbers.
No explanation.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Or what any of these things really mean. Mm. So we kind of come home and it's Dr. Google.
We're Googling it.
Yeah.
Essentially, trying to find out, you know, more. I think I think the option is there, obviously, to then book in with your GP and sit down with them and talk those numbers through. I never did that, but maybe
I
should.
Also, by that point, we were lucky we had our referral to a fertility clinic come through because that was about the same time. And so then the clinic picked up on things and they were very quick.
Yeah.
Mm. So that's why we were like, look, let's just do another one with the clinic. And then you did another one with the hospital, didn't
that
you?
That one wasn't as long, I don't think, to wait for.
No,
was
that
it?
Was,
it
was, and we're very lucky with where we are.
We got quite quick.
And what happened there with that one for people listening?
The second one, when we went back and had our meeting with actually at the fertility clinic. The numbers, they'd gone up slightly, I think.
Do you mind me saying what they were?
I don't mind. You can say. I don't actually
just
genuinely...
Just in case it helps other people.
Yeah,
I don't always remember.
I don't remember.
So your sperm count on the first one. Sperm count should be, I think it's about 14 million.
Yeah.
Yours was under 2 million.
Yeah.
So, which sounds like a lot, but actually is considered low.
Mm-hmm.
Then by the second one, it went up to 3 million, but we were kind of told it that's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Because it is changeable. Your motility, so how many were swimming in a forward motion, that was 8%. And I think this is the one I get wrong, but I think it should be something like
20%
or 30% maybe. Yeah.
Which, can I say, is just so ironic. Because the only sport I was ever good at as a kid was swimming. So it kills me that...
Nope, they can't swim.
That was my exact reaction.
I was like, but I'm a good swimmer.
What? I was like, it's the only... Genuinely, everything else, pretty rubbish at sport-wise. You know,
swimming.
Yeah.
Oh,
come on.
Goodness sake.
Your swimmers don't swim.
There you go.
And then your morphology, which is the way they look. They've got two heads or tail. Have they got a normal head, normal tail, the shape of them? That should be 4% for men. So men should have 4% normal sperm and you have 1%.
Yeah.
So everything quite low.
So that first one, I think initially I was like, there must be a mistake. That was my first reaction to this. There must be a mistake. That's why they need to do it again. Those numbers can't quite be right. I must have done something wrong. You know, I didn't catch them all. You know, there must be something else. So I'll go back in. I went on to the sperm supplements as well then. So I started taking Proxeed to see if that would help. I did start looking at my diet and things like that as well. But I genuinely don't know what else I could have changed.
It can be a lifestyle thing, and that's what you kept getting told, isn't it? It's lifestyle, and you were like, well, I already do everything.
Yeah. If you Google, you know, why do I have a low sperm count? All of those things are things that don't apply to me. Things like drinking, things like smoking, all of these things. And so I was really in disbelief. And then I was quite angry. Like, I know that's bad. I had always in my head just thought that a low sperm count was not associated with people like me. And that is not the truth. And I'm not saying, oh, you don't need to worry, go for it. Smoke, drink, do everything you like and you'll be absolutely fine. I'm not saying that. But I am saying you can be a fitness professional, you can be as fit and healthy as you like, but if you've got a low sperm count, you've got low sperm count.
I have to say as well, Carl, because whenever I've kind of spoken to people who aren't possibly in the know, and of course you wouldn't be, I guess, unless you're in this journey, I've had people say to me things like, oh, well, you know, it must mean that, you know, you're not healthy, or it must mean that, you know, you've got to look at your diet and your lifestyle. And I think it's true for, like you say, the most part, some people really do need to look at it. And, you know, me and Andrew have certainly made adjustments. But I can't even imagine how hard that must be even if you're telling even a friend and other people who know you, how mind-boggling that must be to try and get people to understand that is not you. Like, how do you reconcile that?
It's taken a long time, and I still don't really think I'm fully there, because even, you know, when Catherine's saying those numbers, that's still... No, I want you to say those things, and it's important we say those numbers.
It might help other people,
but
it still gets you.
And I think that's why I don't remember the numbers, because I don't want to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's still tough. It's still really tough to hear. So, yeah, I'm still kind of getting to grips with that. It's got better, don't get me wrong, and talking about it has helped hugely. And finding out more, you know, because the story kind of continues there, that I was very much wanting to pin this on something, I suppose, and go, no, that I need an answer, I need to know something. I did go for an ultrasound, which they did offer me, but I did push for it. It was still very much the... refused the, excuse the pun, but the ball was in my court. You know, it was still very much like, if you want this, you call up. And I did.
And we're lucky that we got offered that on the NHS, yes. And another blood test as well for genetic stuff for you.
Yeah.
So we're very fortunate. It's not always available on the NHS, yeah. But they did offer it to us.
Yes. So I went for an ultrasound.
What was that like?
Again, that was an experience. So just to be clear, it's
right.
Basically, you lie on a bed. They pour jelly over your bits, and they ultrasound the whole area. Which, of course, you know, look, it's uncomfortable and whatever else. But let's be honest, it's a scratch of the surface compared to what you guys are going to be going through. So, they found a varicose seal, which is very common with men with infertility problems. It's basically a blockage.
It's like an enlarged vein that's stopping sperm being produced properly and getting out.
You can have them on both sides, or you can have them on just one. And they can vary in kind of size, and they're not dangerous. And there is an operation that can they can treat a varicose seal, but there's no absolute guarantee that your sperm health will change drastically through them doing this. Mm-hmm. Mine was about a medium size. I think they described it as varicose seal. So, they didn't feel they needed to operate.
Yeah, and as a result, we were put forward for ICSI, which is where they take a sperm and inject it. It's a form of IVF.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And it's ICSI is the form of IVF when it is a male infertility problem.
Yeah. So when we're being told all of those results, when you hear that the problem is effectively, I don't see it as a blame thing, but you hear that it's a male factor, what goes through your head and what has gone through your head?
So it's very emasculating, to be fair. It's really strange. It takes you to this very odd place in your head where you start to really question, you almost go, what is my purpose? Do you know what I mean? But you do. It goes through your head where you go, I can't do that thing that I feel like I should be able to do. And this is all obviously kind of ridiculous, and this is just where your mind kind of runs away with you. I'm also as well not your stereotypical masculine man, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not. I'm very in touch with my emotions, and I don't feel what's the right word?
You're not like lads.
No, basically, I'm not.
You're not the lads. Down the pub, football, or like all the stereotypes
of a
manly man.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not that.
He lifts some mega weights.
You do. And he does a high rocks really quickly.
So, I mean, I think like it makes you think, like it brings up lots of questions. You know, what does it mean to be a man? You know, because it's different now.
And I think, well, if I feel like that and I don't really consider myself your big burly masculine man, then how does somebody feel who does consider themselves one of those people? Yeah. And are they talking about it? Are they opening up to their friends? Probably not. Whenever I've mentioned that we're having IVF to friends, most of the time the automatic thought is that Catherine's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Really?
And sometimes it's, I jump in there quite quick and I say, no, it is, in our case, it's the male. It's me. I'm the problem.
How do they react?
Yeah, quite, quite shocked, I think.
Yeah,
they don't. Yeah. And you kind of see, you get some very interesting responses, you know, all sorts, you know.
Like
do
what?
You,
do are you think it's...
Do you think it's the PT? Do you think it's
Is God.
It? Are you too healthy?
Are
you too healthy? They'll look down. It's really strange. They look down straight away and they'll go, you know, is it because you're wearing shorts? And I don't look. These are all things that. No, I'm serious. These are all things that could be, you know. Oh, well, Is it too much cycling or things like that? And by the way, some of these are valid points, can I just say? Like when we sat down with the fertility unit and they go through all of Catherine's results and then they go to me, they do ask those questions. They do say, you know, do you cycle a lot? Are you wearing loose enough underwear? All of these things. Do you take saunas? You know, and there are certain ones that definitely apply. You know, they'll ask you, have you been kicked in the nuts at any point during your life? And you're there going, well, there was this one time in year six where Russell Hartwell gave me a kick in the nads. You know, you're thinking of all these times. Well, I was Peter Pan once and I was stringed up and...
Yeah, he's done a lot of panto seasons in a harness. You've done a lot of dancing in a jock strap. Not just a jock strap, obviously. You've done a lot of...
So there are people's responses have been quite different.
Can I ask how would you want people to react perhaps when, because this is a good hard reaction? One, what do you think would be something that would help you, I suppose, if you were, say you'd met someone, your fairly new friend, newish acquaintance, and you know, you open up about it, because I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel like it's like, well, let's not talk about the war, you know, let's not talk about it.
Yeah.
Because
that's
just not a safe conversation to go to. And I just wondered what would be helpful for you?
I think just to hear them out, just to listen to them. I almost don't think there is a really good response to it. Mm. I think try not to find the solution in a way, you know, just hear them out, because the chances are they don't even really know the solution. So, you know, they don't even really know the reason. So they're not really expecting you to know it either. So I think just let them talk it out. It's probably taken a lot of guts for them to say it in the first place. So if they're willing to open up, just listen to them, I think, is the key. Just to listen.
So can I talk about talking about it? And how was that journey? Because I think at the start, I remember we had a conversation where you were like, are you telling everyone about my sperm? And I said, kind of.
Yeah.
You did say that you're okay with talking about it, but then I feel like you took a step back and you were like, how's that journey been of kind of evolving about getting comfortable talking about it? That must be hard.
Yeah, it was tough. And it was weird because I really wanted you to tell people and I wanted people to know, because I knew that this was taboo. I knew it was a taboo thing. IVF in general, but particularly on the male side as well, I feel like it's taboo. And I knew in my heart of hearts that I wanted to get it out there and make sure that people knew. But there was still this other bit of me that I think was kind of dipping my toe in the water and then backing out again and going, oh, but it's still really tough. Yeah. This is really tough, you know.
Was it like a fear?
Yeah, I think so. And it's there's pride there as well. And again, this is ridiculous, you know, because when we were sat in there with Dr. Brucker,
We love Dr. Brucker.
We love Dr. Brucker.
Yeah, he's like a celeb.
And I just remember saying to him towards the end of our meeting, what can I do? Is there anything I can do to help this? There must be something, you know.
Yeah.
And he just looked at me dead in the eyes and he just said, there is nothing you can do and there is nothing you could have done differently.
Aww.
This is where you are. That's it. And I was like, okay. And I just took that and was like, I have to remind myself of that on a bad day.
Yeah.
That is it.
Like,
you know?
Take the shame out of it.
Yeah. Because for anybody listening who has got that diagnosis and you're listening to this now, you know, and I'm saying this so that you, in case it's crossed your mind as well, and you're not alone in this, but like, I remember thinking to myself, like, Catherine could find somebody who could give her, I know, but, and I have to say it, but Catherine, and I've said it to you before, Catherine could find somebody who could give her this, who could give her what she wants very quickly, because I'm the problem on my side. And I'm not saying that.
I mean, I'd like to interject and say that would never happen. What did I say in response? That I said, well, yeah, that I've been with people before I met you, previous boyfriends, who, yes, I could have maybe had a baby with, but did I want to parent with them?
Yeah.
And no, you're the one I want to parent with. But and you know that it's not logical.
Absolutely.
And you know that I'm with you for, you know, by your side through thick and thin. But it does go through your head, doesn't it?
It does. And I'm saying it in case it's going through other people's heads.
Will
because
be.
It might do.
Might be, yeah.
And shame if it does,
is huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it really is. And I think it's important, you know, to have those conversations, to talk this out, because it's too much otherwise, you know. And I would say to anybody, if you're not a talker, I mean, we've been very lucky with the NHS that we've been offered free counselling, you know. And there's a reason you get given counselling for this. Because it needs it, you know. So we did, we took them up on that, and I'm glad we did it. And yeah, I would advise anybody, if you can and you're in a position to do that and you are being offered that, or if financially you're able to fund that yourself, then do it.
Yeah.
Because, and if you can't, then talk to somebody that you feel will really listen to you and that you can talk to. And if you can't do that, then write it down.
Yeah.
You know? Literally write it down, get it off, get it out of your head, and take a step away from it so that you can see it on a page or whatever it is, in a voice note that only you're going to hear. Yeah, I think that's my advice.
It's really helpful. I'm sure there's actually a lot of people who are, I mean, with things like this, I think it's never spoken about in terms of the impact on relationships and friendships and,
yeah,
you know, your sense of self and the way that you perceive the world is completely different. And I am so glad that you were told it is not your fault and it is not anything you could have done or anything you can do to change it. Similarly, we were told the same, and it's so helpful to hear that.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, there is people think that, don't they? People think when you tell them that, oh, what have you done to create this? And
especially when there seems to be quite a bit of a blame game with fertility. It's like, oh, whose side is it on then? Who's got the problem, sort of thing? And it's really hard when that is the rhetoric that we hear a lot.
Yeah. And male fertility on the whole it's on the decline, and we don't know why, essentially, whether it's mobile phones in pockets or what, we don't know, but it is. And the more that I'm talking to people about this, the more other people are opening up back and saying, actually, that's me. Or, you know, I'm hearing more and more about this the more I've been talking about it as well. And can I just say as well that I know we spoke about people's responses and, you know, some of the funny responses or whatever. On the whole, people have been amazing, I have to say, around me, and people I've spoken to about this have been incredibly supportive. And even friends who have just made the right joke at the right time.
Yeah, because you have to laugh about it sometimes.
You do, you know, and that's important too, you know.
You had a friend, something about swimmers.
I can't remember what it was.
Some joke about, your friends were going to go swimming on holiday or something.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, bring your swimmers, Carl, not yours.
Not yours, yours are no good, you know. But like, knowing when to crack that joke is maybe, but do you know what I mean? But I also know that they're the same friends that will sit there and listen to me for half an hour or however long I need to get this off my chest, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Can we also talk about as a partner?
Yeah.
So just as the male partner with a female partner going through it, how has that been, kind of watching and not to say that you're not an integral part of the puzzle, because you are, but sometimes it can feel a bit helpless.
Yeah, very much so. This is more towards the stage that we're at now, I suppose, because all of a sudden it shifts slightly. Like you said, it's always about us as a two, but physically, obviously, now this is the book kind of gets passed a little bit to you. So I think being as supportive as you can, and if you feel you want to be involved with those injections, or, you know, trying to find a way that you can be involved as well, I suppose.
In the practicalities.
In the actual, yeah, practicalities of it.
And what's it like watching me do it?
It's, I mean, you've been amazing. I have to say, well, you're both amazing. You know, I listen, I know that I hear most, well, you always relay really to me, don't you? What Sian's been going through and stuff like that as well. She doesn't play the voice notes, obviously. I know there are certain things that you two will chat about. Plus, they're about 20 minutes long, so, you know.
They are.
They are long.
But, yeah. But no, you guys, you know, you're amazing. I watch in awe. I genuinely do. Yeah, I know. I watch in awe. I do. At seeing you do it and, yeah, putting yourself through this to hopefully get what we want at the end of it. It is quite tough to watch and to see.
Is it?
Yeah, even though you know, you're okay with needles and things like that, it's, yeah, as I say, those voices in your head that go, it's your fault that she's having to do it, you know, you just try and quash those voices and just...
Because that was a big part of it for you, wasn't it? When I was in the appointments and scans and stuff.
Yeah, there's an element of sitting there and going, this is because of me, that this is... But as I say, you have to...
And again, I don't see it like that. I see it as an us thing, an us problem. But I know it's so common.
Yes.
A lot of men will be thinking that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I see this as just us doing what we need to do to get our baby.
Yeah.
And it'll be worth it. It'll be totally worth it in the end. But and I think that as women, or as the, you know, the person injecting and doing the physical side of it, we can get quite head down, tunnel vision, crack on, and... I need to remind myself to open up to you as well and go, are you all right?
Which you do, you know, you do. You check back in, which is amazing. I think the whole thing of this as well, the key is just keep talking between the two of you the whole time, because, and don't be afraid to say if you're having a bad day, you're having a bad day, and, you know, let it out. Like, of course, we want to be popping our positive pants on as much as possible, but... Keep it real, you know, it's tough. And you've got to have that communication between the two of you. And I don't think as well, I was thinking about this earlier, even though I felt like I've been dealing with the idea of having a low sperm count and all of that side of things, you know, however many months ago, it's still there. And I'll still have the odd day where it will get me. But I think even though you're physically not doing the injections, and the focus has to be on Catherine, still speak, you know, I will still tell you, oh, do you know what, today, just having a down one, or, you know, not feeling it today.
Yeah.
Because that will colour your communications as well. If you're having a down day, but you're masking it, and I don't know about you guys, but in this journey, I feel like I have to mask it. I'm not allowed. I almost feel like, certainly to the outside world, I have to be like, no, I'm fine. Yep, I'm good. I'm strong.
Yeah.
But really inside, you're feeling something completely different. And I don't know, like sometimes you bring that home, don't you? Because you're like, I don't want to upset my partner.
You want to be the strong one.
Yeah. And then you realise...
But actually...
Yeah,
and actually kind of breaking that wall down, we connect more over that, rather than just, you know, if you were just pretending to be like, I'm fine, I've got to be strong, I've got to stay strong for you, that would not serve us as well as if we were honest. And we connect more over the real emotions, don't we?
Yeah, and those feelings will bottle up and bottle up, you know. So if you if you're listening to this and you're thinking, no, I've got to be strong, you know, my wife's struggling at the moment with her, you know, there's being strong is not just being quiet. That isn't being strong. Being strong is actually voicing it as well. And is sharing that. And that's important.
I actually saw that in a maths episode with Paul Brunson.
Oh, really?
Maybe I've stolen that from PCB off of maths from Paul Carrick Brunson.
He actually
says
that.
He's very wise.
He's so wise.
Oh, really?
Oh, I love PCB.
Me too.
Carl doesn't watch it. He's not in our club.
No. But he does. But he does say that, you know, in terms of, it's really, because I think particularly for the man, you know, the male counterpart, or at least one part of the partnership, that you feel like I've got to be the strong one, but actually he does talk about it. He says no. actually you have to be, the intimacy, the closeness comes from you being honest with one another and showing that you are in it with them. And I think that's important. Yeah.
And if you keep it in, it's just going to bubble up and it will eventually, you know, come out. So.
All right. Well, that was really, really amazing, Carl, to hear everything that you're going through and from your perspective. And it's going to help a lot of people. I wondered how you're seeing things in the future and what the future's kind of looking like. In terms of the treatment,
I'm feeling hopeful is my response. And I actually, I know you guys were talking about this in other episodes about people's reactions. You know, we have a lot of when I had it today, and I'm not saying this against anybody who said this to me in the past. It's fine, it's a natural reaction. But when you tell somebody you're going through IVF, or you know, it's egg collection week, sometimes the response is, oh, that's so exciting. You know, we know this, we get this a lot, and I know it's not meant with any malice or problem, and it's not a problem. Saying it is exciting, I don't know if exciting is the exact phrase we would use.
I don't know if I'm feeling that excited right now.
Yeah, not necessarily feeling excited. But actually, somebody said to me the other day, I feel hopeful for you guys. And that was, for me, the perfect response. Because that is how I am feeling. I am feeling hopeful on the whole, for all of us, not just for us two, for you guys as well, for you and Andrew, I feel hopeful. So that's how I'm feeling about it. I'm just trying to take one day at a time at the moment. I'm trying to control what I can control and leave everything else, because I can't get too ahead of myself with this.
And doing it together, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've always got each other.
Exactly.
When we got married, I kind of said, this is us now. Like, before we got married as well, but that was the feeling, not just from that point, but that was the feeling on our wedding day. I thought, I never have to go through anything else on my own.
Of wedding day, your dad in his speech said something that I always kind of carry with me. He's a very wise man. He's
Kevin.
Your dad. He really is. Shout out. But he said, like, life will not always be easy. There will be bumps in the road. And there will be things that you've got to navigate. And this is one of those bumps that we have got to navigate around. And I do genuinely believe we will come out of the other end of this stronger than we went in.
Yeah.
I already do. I already feel thicker skinned because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully better parents.
Yeah,
so that when our baby is having a meltdown in the changing rooms, I remind myself how hard they were to get.
To make, yeah.
Yeah. And the sleepless nights, you're going to go.
Yeah.
I actually interestingly heard, it was a friend who told me this the other day. She said, you know, motherhood, I know, is hard. Like, that is hard. But she said, and being a parent, being a dad, that is going to be hard. But she said, I can tell you now from lots of people who've gone through this, she said, nothing will ever be as hard as this in comparison.
We say a lot of the time, we're like, look, we know that parenting is going to be hard, and yet we'll probably come back to you when we do it and be like, oh my God, you were right. But there's got to be joy, right? In parenting, there is joy to be found. Whereas in this bit, we do our best, but there ain't a lot of joy to be had in this bit, let's be honest.
Yeah. Holding on, you know? Yeah. Holding on.
Also, finding, I have to say, Carl, as you're a PT, and the doctor's told, and has told you too as well, Catherine, I am so struggling to not be able to exercise. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we're jealous of you now.
Yeah.
It's a real tool in that toolkit to have is that.
In terms of toolkits as well, I know that you kind of wanted to leave people with a bit of a practical toolkit, of a few bits of advice. If there's a man listening to it right now, going through similar, what would you suggest they do?
So the first one, which I know we've covered a lot, the talking out loud about this and airing it, no matter what those feelings are. And like we said, even if they are, you don't even really believe you're thinking them, you know, things like thinking your partner could go with somebody else and have a child and all these, you know, things, to speak them out, to talk them out, or to write them down. If you feel you haven't got those people to talk to, as I said, writing down is an option. Or if you feel you need more support, there are the Male Fertility Podcast, and I mentioned them earlier. They are brilliant. And actually, I've been in touch with them directly myself after I started listening to those episodes.
Sean and Kieran, they're called, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, and they are excellent. They both have different stories, you know, and I advise go right back to the beginning and listen to their stories. Can I also just say as well, they, I think it's, is it Sean or Kieran? One of them has azoospermia, I hope I've said that.
Yeah.
Right, which is a condition where they have no sperm, zero sperm. Which is obviously is different to what we've been talking about today, and that's a whole other thing, something else to deal with completely. Yeah, that kind of deserves its own episode in itself, and I don't know, maybe you'll get one of those guys on here as well. I think that's important to talk about as well. And they are incredibly brave, both of them. And as I say, they've got a podcast, the Male Fertility Podcast, and they also have a WhatsApp support group, which enables, men to talk a little bit more about this with other people who are going through similar situations. So yeah, I advise really reaching out and just finding your people. You know, there are other people going through this, all different walks of life and all different stories. And I think it's just trying to connect with a few of those if you can. I have to say, sometimes I'm not in the mood to listen, and to talk about it. And sometimes there has to be that element of switching off from it a little bit. So that's my next bit of advice as well, is have those moments where you don't think about it and that you do something completely unrelated. I'm binge watching Gavin and Stacey from the beginning again.
Oh,
I'm watching very
what
light.
What else are you watching? What else are you watching?
I'm watching, right, on somebody's recommendation. Who's actually quite a blokey bloke. He said, watch Emily in Paris.
It's
he
great.
Said, it's the lightest, easiest watch ever.
I sit
Andrew
down next
it.
To Carl.
Andrew
oh, there we go.
It.
There we go.
Here we go.
You can talk about it on your episode.
There we go.
I sit down next to him and he's watching it and he's like, guess what? See that guy?
Yeah.
She's kissed him.
Yeah.
Like filling me in with a drop, and I'm like, ooh, he's like, yeah, it's kicking off on Emily
so,
in Paris.
There you go.
It's great.
Whatever TV show it is, but have that little bit of like easy comfort watching that just, whether it's Friends, Gavin and Stacey, whatever it is, just fill your cup, basically, is what I'm saying. Whether it's go out for a walk and just do things that aren't IVF related and have those moments where you need to switch on, you know, listen to your favourite album, whatever it is. Yeah. Do that. You need that time as well. Otherwise, it can just consume you a little bit going through this. And I guess that would be it, really.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh, that's so great.
Thank you, Carl.
I don't even know how long that's been, so I apologise if that's been hours.
So good. Yeah. I think it's so good to hear from you. I know I hear from you every day, but...
Oh, thanks. Hopefully it's not waffled too much.
No,
so good. Thank you.
I really think it's going to help so many people. So thank you for that. Mm.
And if you are listening and you do want to reach out for another ear, I'm always up for a chat. So
what's your Insta?
Come and get me on Instagram at Carl Tracy Training.
Carl Tracy Training.
There you go.
If you'd like to follow us, IVF BFF on Instagram, you can. We are at IVF BFF Pod. You can drop us a message. I love the people on there.
Too.
We've got a really nice little community.
We had a voice note
and then
as well, didn't we?
We had a voice note.
Yeah, we
loved
that. We've got
and,
our Gmail as well.
You can also email us on ivfbffpod@gmail.com and get involved in the conversation.
And we'd love to hear from some men as well. Like, don't feel like you can't reach out to us. You know, we quite like to hear. Actually, we have a few men who have reached out to us. But any more, if you're
But it'd
listening.
Be nice if this is the episode that maybe the women listening could show their partners if they have a male partner. Not everyone does have a male partner, but if this is applicable to you.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the episode that could make them just feel a little bit less alone.
Yeah.
Or a partner who's struggling, maybe. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Mm. So, until next time.
Mm.
Yeah.
This time next week, you would have done your egg collection.
I might have, if the follies grow,
if
the little follicles
grow.
Yeah. So, but hopefully, fingers crossed...
my gosh.
Who knows? It could all change all over again. But yeah, yes. Next episode, I might have had egg collection. Eek.
Oh my gosh. So
that'd be good ep.
That will be good. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, my loves.
All right. Okay.
I guess we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's been a pleasure. Nice to chat to you as well, Sean.
Yeah, it was lovely to have you here, Carl.
All right.
All right.
Much love.
Much love, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.